हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 1 Realizations of Vyasadeva in Trance, page 32. Okay, so we're continuing with the Purva Paksha. By association with the gunas, the capacity as agent and enjoyer is placed in Atma. In a dream, someone imagines a palace, a king, and citizens, and thinks himself the ruler. When knowledge appears and one wakes up, nothing else exists. Only the one Atma, which is consciousness, remains. Uttara. Right? So it's still that same principle. They're saying there's one jiva. Right? That is somehow or another produced by Brahman. Why? They don't have a reason, but whatever it is, they're trying to explain their position. And so then, you know, then it's all like a dream. You think of so many things happen. And then when one comes to knowledge, then one awakens from that state, and then everything goes away. The only problem is that means, what do we have to do with it since we're not that original Atma? So why should we be endeavoring? We're part of the dream.
Who's dreaming?
The one Atma.
Not Brahman?
No. Oh. Means, don't worry, none of it makes sense. You know, you say, but that's not logical. Of course not. We're clear, is that the Vaishnava philosophy, that's logical. Everything else is not. It's just that clear. Yes, Haribol. Okay, Uttara. This Anucheda refutes this idea. According to what was previously said, with the refutation of bifurcation or reflection of Brahman, only Brahman and ignorance are left to be discussed. Brahman is completely free of ignorance since it is not subject to anything. Argyo nahi griyate. That which is imperceptible cannot be perceived. Read Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26. Because the two, Brahman and ignorance, are contradictory, it is impossible to establish their interaction. Purvapaksha, then their doubt comes back. When there is suddenly a relation between avidya and pure Brahman, tatra shudhayam, jiva arises from this relationship. So now they're trying to explain it. That when it suddenly happens, but why would it be? Where does the ignorance come from? If there's only Brahman, where does ignorance come from? And if there's no time and space, where would this suddenly come from? Mm-hmm. Right? But if you say that, suddenly it happened, then immediately, oh yeah. You know, it's just, what it is that there's certain key things you can say that catch your attention. And you just roll with it. So that's all that these people do. You know, it's very, very common. One may ask how it is, but how is it that you see, generally speaking, if you want to get some big guru or something like that, totally bogus, but it's always an Indian guy, right? Because they know how to do this. They've been doing it for thousands of years. I can remember we had this one Namhata person. He would come to Mayapur, you know, on a regular basis, especially in the winter. And I'd been seeing him every year for, I don't know, 10, 15 years or something, he would come. He's from their family before was exceedingly wealthy. They were in silk. And then his father was doing a show in New York. And they had you know, at that time, crores invested, which, you know, would have been a lot of money, because this would have been, you know, back, I'm not sure when. And so then somehow or another, a fire broke out in that expo, you know, with all those, what do you call it? You know, all the people from all around the world and all their cloth, and the whole thing burnt down. So he lost everything. So all his investment was there. So then they have the potential, they know how to do, but they didn't at the time. And so then he's coming to ISKCON and it's fine. But then one day when he started making money again and they were well situated again, then this one Indian guy shows up. You know, one kind of sadhu guy. Knocks on the door. He's never seen the guy before and all that. He asks, who is he? He says, oh, I'm your guru. He says, you're my guru? He says, well, you know, why you're coming? What do you mean? What are you coming now? He says, because before you weren't ready. You know, you say that and it's like, oh, okay. And I even heard someone else say that. Admetatta was telling that he was traveling around and he was up in Rishikesh or Hardwar, and he was invited to stay at one person's house, and then again his guru came along and did the same thing. So it's a standard trick, you know. You know, it's like pickpockets. They have standard tricks like that. So you know, or secondhand car salesmen, you know, like that. So they have all these tricks. They're standard tricks. So they find when there's suddenly a relationship, when you say suddenly, you don't think about it. When I say, when a relationship begins, you'll say when, why. But if I say suddenly a relationship, you just, what? Oh, okay. You understand? So that's all it is they've gotten language down to explain the bogus. That, you know. Yes.
It sounds exactly like the advanced theory. Suddenly you have.
Yes.
Suddenly nobody.
Yeah, yeah, just like that. You take unlimited mass and squeeze it into an unlimitedly small space, as if that physically is possible. They're physicists. Is that possible? Right? If you took unlimited mass and made it into a small space, you'd end up with a super diamond. How is that going to explode?
Suddenly.
Yes, suddenly.
Yes,
exactly. Exactly. And that's why, how you say, the lady that bewildered Aurobindo was from that your particular part of the world. See, they catch on quick. But with the sophistication. Yeah. But that's it. So just like that, then you just drop questions. So that's important to notice, that certain things are said to do that. It's the same thing as used. Let's say you're working in the politically correct field. That someone to avoid it, make a point or to avoid an argument, will say something that they'll use words that if you oppose it, then you're opposing something good. Right? They'll make what they're saying, which may be wrong or bad, and use terms that make it look like it's good. So now if you're opposing it, then you're opposing good. And then when you say something, they'll take it and twist it more into something else. You know, just like, how you say, that person is what do you call it? Yeah, he's so focused on his work. Right? And then you'll say, you know, something about, oh, why you're making discrimination, or, oh, you don't like Asians? You know, it says, what's that got to do with he works or not work? What's that got to do with that? Oh, but you're stereotyping? What, I didn't say Asians, you said Asians. Oh, now I'm the one that's wrong? You know, it's just, they just keep going with this. You understand? So there's just ways of reacting that the other person just leaves it. So that's the standard stuff that's used. When you use logic, some of the padarthas are like this. Chala is one of the main. You just change the definition. You know? Does that make sense? You're using a word in one context, they'll switch it into another context and then use that against you. Or use it for their own benefit. Whatever. So it's just, that's then the way it works. You understand? So chala is there. Or stonewalling, where you don't answer, you just change the subject and stuff like that. You don't let them get at you with their questions. You won't answer it. So these are all systems that can be used But the whole point of that Krishna makes is that unless it's for the purpose of attaining Siddhanta, to actually understand the absolute truth according to the Parampara, then it's useless. So if you have someone who's bogus, you might use these technical things, these distractions, to establish the argument. But only if you're trying to establish the absolute truth. But if these things are used not for that, then they're just a waste of time. So, a lot of waste of time is going on here. Okay, so, when there's suddenly a relation between avidya and pure Brahman, tatra shudhayam, jiva arises from the relationship, becoming the shelter of maya, produced by that jiva, Brahman becomes Ishwara. Right, so now, suddenly there's a relationship between avidya and pure Brahman, and that relationship produces jiva. Now that jiva themselves, then they, by that process of, you know, how you say, dreaming, you know, in a dream someone imagines a palace, a king, citizens, and thinks himself the ruler. So that thinking like that, that's now become maya. So just by his thinking, he has produced maya. Right? Where avidya comes from, but at least, you know, you can say it's come from this jiva. Now, Brahman, overcome by maya, then you get Ishwara. But how would Brahman become, overcome by maya? It's transcendental. So they just take all these positions and people just don't ask. You know, like that. Utra. This is gossip of the ignorant, not the learned. Though appearing to be a learned conclusion, it is cheating. The quotation from Kaivalya Upanishad means that jiva is none other than Brahman, because Brahman functions as jiva's support, and because Brahman is all-pervading. Right? So in that way, then Sankarsana is called jiva, because he's the support of the jivas. This is the explanation of the wise, saying the jiva and Ishwara created by maya in the Sringa Chapani Upanishad is merely expressing the ideas created by logicians who are bewildered by maya. Because remember, in the Sringa Chapani, it only mentions about the jiva. It doesn't mention Ishwara, but they throw it in. Because their whole point is it's all illusion. An illusion is maya. And so therefore, then when there's avidya, you get jiva, and when there's maya, then you get Ishwara. So therefore, they're the same, so therefore you get both out of the one thing, so that's their explanation. But the shloka doesn't say it. Riti, having established that the Mayavadi version is opposed to the trance of Vyasadeva, and having highlighted some of the key defects in their logic, Srila Jiva Goswami next argues that the monistic conclusion is against the experience of Sukadeva Goswami, the prime speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam.
Unless we are reading from the Vaishnava Acharya, will be cheated by these people.
Yes. The point is Siddhanta is only actually given by the Vaishnava Acharyas. Then if someone else in other lines is accepting that, it works. Right? Because the Veda is there. Everyone's following the Veda. The thing is just on how you're going to interpret what's given there. So some aspects they may have correct. You know, it's just like if you have a mathematical equation that has 10,
steps.
Then if 9 of them are correct and 1's wrong, the answer is wrong. But, so if we get bewildered, but 9 things are correct, so they're like us, and so we can just do what they do. But you have to remember, it's wrong. So that's why it has to be so exact in the discussions of what's right and wrong. Right? Because otherwise, then what happens is that it looks similar, so then we'll take everything from them. Right? It means what aspects are correct, those things are common. Right? You know, it's just like when it comes to accepting the Bhagavad Gita and practicing the Bhagavad Gita, then Srila Prabhupada will count, you know, Mahatma Gandhi, or even like that, is as involved. You know, if he's talking about the Indian culture, the Vedic culture, he'll include Vivekananda and Ramakrishna. But as he goes in, and then the scriptures, then they'll go to, then they'll drop it down to Mahatma Gandhi. Then those who are, you know, actually applying it to uplift themselves and this and that and detach themselves from the material phenomena, then he'll include Shankara. Then when he's talking about the proper understanding, then he'll only include the four Vaishnava Acharyas. Right? So the four Sampradayas is, that's it. So that's then how you have to see is in which context it's being applied. Anucheta 41. If the conclusion were ultimately non-difference of the Lord and the Jiva in Bhagavatam, it would be stated that Vyasa had seen that by ignorance of Brahman. The one Brahman would become different, producing Jiva, and that by knowledge, suffering caused by difference disappeared. Since the Lord's pastimes would become completely unreal, this conception is contrary to the heart of Sukadeva. Right? So you don't have that. It's being cleared from ignorance. That's how then Vyasadeva is what he's seeing in trance. Because before he saw the absolute, but he didn't see it on the highest platform. And because of that, he didn't give certain details. It means whatever he's given before is valid. But it's just, you can take it further. So, Mahabharata is valid, but you can take it further in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Anucheta Prakashika, from Sri Jiva Toshami. After giving logical refutations of monism, Srila Jiva Goswami proceeds to disprove it by reference to Shabda Praman, or scriptural evidence. Right? First, you're just talking logic, and then showing the logic against their quote, because that's all they're using. Right? Early in the Praman portion of Tattva Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami established the Srimad Bhagavatam as the supreme authority among all types of Pramanas. Now he refutes monism on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. The core of Srimad Bhagavatam is the verses narrating Srila Vyasadeva's trance, including Maya. No? Vyasadeva's trance, in which he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete with his potencies, including Maya. Boy. Oh, because there's two ends there, okay. Vyasadeva did not see a non-differentiated Brahman being overpowered by Maya and turned into many Jivas. Rather, he saw the Jiva distinct from the Lord, but captivated by Maya because of thinking himself independent of the Lord. He saw that this false independence is the cause of the Jiva's suffering. Simultaneously, he saw that the solution to the Jiva's bondage is devotional service to the Supreme Person, Bhakti Yogam Adhoksajay, not knowledge of oneness with him. Right? That you have knowledge of that oneness with him, then that puts you, separates you from Maya. Right? You know, so it's that same principle. But the point is knowing how one is non-difference, that then what does that mean? You're spiritual. But the point is how is it we're coming under illusion he's not? Right? So that means there's a difference. And so that means then we serve the greater. So we're everything's coming from Krishna, so naturally we'll be connected back to that origin. So that makes sense. Yeah.
When you said that yesterday he saw. He realized?
Yes, he sat down in meditation, and then in that he saw.
It was a visual.
Yeah, it means with however it is, but he saw. Whether it's using his eyes or not, it doesn't matter. It's just like the yogis, when they sit in meditation, they see the super soul, but they're just meditating within the heart. Yes. Right? The Lord reveals himself.
Yes. Okay. Revelation.
Yes, revelation. That's why it says realizations of Vyasadeva in trance. So yes. Realizations means then revelations will be there.
Yes.
Right? So he's realizing revelations. Yes. Yes. Realizing revelations revealed by the Lord. Yes, okay. Also, Sukadeva Goswami, who is the chief among all the Brahman-realized transcendentalists and worshipable by all others, rejected the state of absolute oneness between the Lord and the Jivas. Footnote 11. While speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages of Naimisharanya, Suta Goswami specifically mentions that originally Sukadeva was absorbed in the bliss of Brahman. Later, upon hearing some selected Bhagavatam verses describing the pastimes and attributes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his heart was captivated. So much so, Sukadeva studied the Lord's pastimes and excelled in narrating them. Okay. Therefore, the keys to the monistic doctrines, Parichedavad and Pratibimbavad, are supported neither by logic nor by the scriptures, especially not the supreme pramana, Srimad Bhagavatam. Rather, the Mayavadis arrive at their conclusions by word juggling and distorting the scriptural truths, which only serves to confuse the innocent reader. Right? So, that's why it's saying what it means by word jugglery. That's why it says before is that the Abhida Shakti means the direct understanding of something. Right? The direct understanding, the direct application. Lakshana means then you're using indirect. So, the rule is if in that context that means why it's being presented and everything, the Abhida Shakti applies, or the direct applies, you would not use the indirect. So, in areas where the direct applies, and so therefore in the Sringatapa and Upanishad is talking about the jiva, but there may be some way to juggle the words by how you break them or go back to the root and the derivative, and you could get out of there the jiva and Ishwara, then they'll do that. Though it's an indirect meaning, because directly it doesn't say that. By the context of the verses around, by the conversation, by the questions, like this, that would not be the conversation. But they don't. They just lift the one, then by juggling the Sanskrit, then they come up with some other meaning. So, right. And then by that, then they say, oh yes, it means this. But that's the point, is if you just look at it directly, it doesn't mean that, and it makes sense in that way. Right? In the direct meaning. So why would you go for an indirect? Right? So it's only if it doesn't make sense. You know, like it says, Vrindavan is on the Jamuna. Then, you know, means it's not that, Mayan city that's floating on a lake, right? So then we know that, okay, then it must mean, you know, by the poetic use, meaning on the bank. And so then we're using the indirect. So when the indirect applies, the direct doesn't apply. You can't say, no, it says Vrindavan's on the Yamuna, so all this is not Vrindavan. It's there, you know, but we don't see it, so maybe like Atlantis, it's sunk. So now we have to go diving to find it, you know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, so rather the Mayavadis arrive at their conclusions by word juggling and distorting the scriptural truths, which only serves to confuse the innocent here. Sarvasamvadani. Sarvasamvadani is?
Jiva Goswami's own commentary.
His own, okay.
And Jiva Toshini?
No, Jiva Toshini is?
Is
Kusakratak. Kusakratak Prabhu. Kusakratak Prabhu had originally gone through and he wrote a commentary. And so then taking from that, which parts apply, you know, that just given overall, we'll use that in the Prakashika, and some that it gives more detail, we'll put that in as the Jiva Toshini. So sometimes you see it just used as the Prakashika, sometimes just as the commentary, and sometimes as both. It's just whichever we'll bring out. So Sarvasambhadini, that's Jiva Goswami's commentary. So it's a very common thing, you write the work because it exactly says what you want. And so if someone has the knowledge by reading it, then it'll just deepen their understanding. But if they don't understand it, it needs a commentary. Right? Because when you're dealing with the aspect, by the main work itself, you'll see the flow and see the exactness of it. You won't get confused by more addition of things in the commentary. Right? Because otherwise, in the modern context, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't write a work and then write a commentary. They put it together. And okay, for a first read, then that's fine. But if you're actually studying it, your area, then all that may get in the way. You want to see something exact, so you just go through that. Is that what you're saying? Yeah, just like, let's say, we're reading something in Gita, and we want to look at something that Krishna's talking about, yoga. So we're trying to get some aspect of just the yoga itself. So you might just read the translations of those, you know, four or five verses, and then see the context. And then if it makes sense there, yes. If not, you look down into the commentary. Right? But if that's all put together, then you can't see what those individual things are. Does that make sense? So then it's just traditionally done like that. Sarvasambhadani. This is contrary to the heart of Sukadeva. If the powers of the Lord were just creations of avidya, Sukadeva would not have become attracted to Krishna's pastimes, as stated in the text. Later in Bhagavad Sandarbha, this will be discussed in detail. Okay, so he being liberated means he's already on that Brahman platform. Why would be attracted if it was avidya? Right? So that's the whole point. And then if you're saying, oh no, but it's pastimes, then that means Brahman has pastimes. That means that Brahman has a personality. Okay. So let's discuss that. If Brahman has a personality, then that means then there's a personal aspect there. Right? But then they won't want to discuss that because they want to stick to the impersonal. So therefore, if you're throwing that out, you have to throw this out. How are they seeing him? Probably not at all. The Sankara avoided the Bhagavatam, so they generally stay away from Puranas. They like to use Upanishads because it's easier to do word juggling. In the Bhagavatam, in the classical Sanskrit, generally you're using more direct words. While in the Vedic Sanskrit, because Upanishads will be Vedic Sanskrit, then Nirukta means using obscure words. Yeah? So that's it. Because things that may have multiple meanings, then it's only in the context you know which one it means. So the Vedas will use that a lot. That's why they're more confusing. That's why then the Puranas are considered better, because they're more direct. Because they'll show some person in their discussions and how they're applying it. And so it's more direct. And then of the Puranas, then the Bhagavatam's the best. So that then being, having discussed the logic of it, now they're just showing that Bhagavatam doesn't support it. So therefore, it being the highest authority within the Vedic literature, is therefore it has to be accepted, it doesn't. So they can say, oh, we don't accept Bhagavatam, then, you know, the previous discussions are there, but for ourselves, then we have to understand it's not logic that purely alone that makes something important.
So if something like, if you use direct, then it is very easy to come to a conclusion, but if you use indirect, then they can juggle around and they can play around with it.
Yes.
Their motivation.
Yes. Yes.
And to avoid a point that sometimes in this moment when you are attracted by material energy, it means that what you are doing because they don't develop it in their mind.
That means if they get bored of just the nothingness and they want to do something, since all they know is the material world as action, then they'll come back to the material world.
If someone will ask you, maybe you think that Sukadeva is trying to go for instead of saying to Sukadeva, that Sukadeva is trying to go to the cloud and go to the
cloud. Okay. You hear? She was saying that we say that those who go up to the Brahman, then having merged in Brahman, then when they become, they want to become, you know, they get bored of that, they want to become active. So then they're going to think of the material world. And thinking of the material world, then they'll come back here. You know, they'll get into philanthropic work and all that kind of jazz. So then she's pointing out, so could they use the argument that maybe Sukadeva Goswami, that's what's happened to him, so we can't take him as an authority. Right? So that's clever. So the one difficulty comes is that they don't say that, because what's going to Brahman, then they're on that platform. You can't fall from that platform. And their idea. So discussing their philosophy is there. We're discussing us because we talk about that there is beyond Brahman. So that's the Parabrahman. So being situated in Parabrahman, that will keep you from falling away. Because for us, the Brahman realization still doesn't get you out of the confines of the Mahatattva, which they'll consider would be within the realm of Maya. So they're considering they go beyond Maya to Brahman. And we're just pointing out that Maya is also Brahman, so they're just being absorbed in that Brahman aspect, or that avyakta aspect of Maya. And that itself then is their so-called liberated position. So they're separated from the secondary creation, but they're not separated from material consciousness. So the consciousness is not actually fully transcendental. Right? So there's a difference there. And we see Sukadeva Goswami is not getting involved in philanthropic work and stuff like that. He's still just discussing transcendence. So
when he was discussing the transcendence, you name all the sages about like who are their ideals in Brahman relation. Everybody's present there. No exception.
Yeah, not everybody's there. So all the great personalities who are on that transcendental platform, they're all there at this Bhagavatam's discussion. Srila Balabhadeva Vidyabhushana. Another failure in the proposition is discussed. If non-difference is the conclusion in Bhagavatam, Sutta would have said that Vyasadeva saw Brahman divided by ignorance and suffering destroyed by knowledge. Right? Because if non-difference is there, means there's only oneness, you don't have also difference, then, you know, in other words, it's all one in that it's all Krishna and his energies. But at the same time, there's difference because there's difference in the positions of these different of the energetic and then the different energies. They're all Brahman, but there's differences. So if they're only taking the oneness, then he would have said to get all this difference, then you would have to have Brahman divided by ignorance, right? And then getting rid of that ignorance that's destroyed by knowledge, right? You would have had that, but he didn't. He's saying that the oneness is there and the difference, right, simultaneously. But that is not stated. Vyasa saw the complete Purusha and the Jiva bewildered, saw the complete Purusha and the Jiva bewildered by Maya, which took shelter of the Lord, and he saw bhakti of the Lord, which destroys the anarthas. So it's not that the knowledge destroyed the anarthas; it's bhakti is destroyed. Right? Because knowledge will only destroy up to a particular level. The bhakti will completely destroy. Riti. Next, Srila Jiva Goswami explains the reason for the monistic statements found in the scriptures. Anucheda 42. Scriptural statements concerning Jiva as a limitation or reflection of Brahman are employed with Gaunya Vriti, secondary meaning, to show similarity. The argument and conclusion are stated in the following. Ambudvad agrahanat tuna tatatvam. There is no similarity because one does not see distance between the Lord and the Jiva, as one sees distance between the sun and water to cause the reflection. Brahma Sutra 3.2.19. Right? Because sun and water, there's a difference. But if Brahman... Jiva is part of Brahman, then where's the space? You need space to get a reflection. You need space to get a bifurcation. There's no space. Right? Because the Jiva is part of Brahman. Brahman is all pervading. Within that is the Jiva, so where's the difference? Right? So that's why he's saying why it will be shown. Right? To show that they're discussing the aspect of that it won't work in this kind of context. Because otherwise people are being thoughtful. They'll sit down and think of these kind of things. So you have to show is that the oneness is pointed out because then they won't come up with some bogus understanding. Right? So that's why the oneness and the difference are both stated in the scriptures. And so just the ones that point out the oneness, that's the ones Mayavadis will use. They won't also, in the same scripture, possibly even same discussion, possibly even just a few verses away, there's the one showing the difference. So they just leave that.
Regarding the Vyasa's trance, Vyasa is seeing the complete Purusha, that is Lord. He is seeing Jiva and he is seeing Maya. So these are personalities. Then he saw bhakti of the Lord was destroyed. So what does this mean that he is seeing bhakti?
Well, what does it mean he is seeing Maya?
Maya has a form, Maya has a form. He saw Maya as a shadow of Lord.
And so every day when the Artik finishes, and before they say all glories to the assembled devotees, what do they say? Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. So you can connect the dots here. Yeah. If everything, it means Krishna being personal, that means everything has a personal aspect. Means you have the generic, but then you have the application. Right? You have greatness, and then there's a mountain. So both the impersonal and the personal are there. Because he's both. So why wouldn't there be a person? There shouldn't be a person.
There shouldn't be.
Okay. Vidhi, Rasa, Bhaktvam, Antar, Bhavad, Udbhaya, Samanjas yo devam. The comparison with the sun is accepted in the sense that it illustrates the nature of greatness of the Lord and dependence of the jiva. Since this is included in the scriptural conclusion and harmonizes the elements of the comparison, Brahma Sutra 3.2.20. Right? So showing that it's not accepted because there's no space, and at the same time it is accepted, because then it shows how the Lord is great, being the sun, and the jiva being small. Because to get a reflection, the reflection, does it happen on its own? Or is it dependent on the sun? Right, so the jiva is dependent on the sun. So that's the part that is given. So when they're talking about the jiva is like the reflection of the sun in a pot of water, that's to show that the jiva is small, the Lord is great, and the jiva is dependent upon the Lord. Right? Not that the jiva is just a reflection. Right? So it's used to show that. You have to know the analogy. Right? At the same time, as you can't say that they're similar, they're the same because they're both just sun. It's just that sun there and this sun here, because you can't use that because there's no space. So you won't end up with that. So if they're going bogus in one way, you explain it in the one. If they're going bogus in the other, then use the other explanation.
Yeah. And Prabhupada in the fourth canto of Parampara is saying, taking this analogy, you're saying the sun actually is very big and the reflection is very small.
Yes, okay, yes. So that's in line with this. Yes. Because you'll see in Prabhupada's purports, he's making these statements. We don't know the background. We just say Prabhupada's making, saying something. But he's always speaking according to the scriptures. So all these fine technical details are all there in his purports. Just that he's not using technical terms, so we don't see it that way.
Yes. The other point is, even for self-realization, one requires God realization. Just like even to see yourself in the mirror, you require the sun rays.
Yes, yes.
So the bhakti for Lord is compulsory even for the monistic realization, whatever. Kind
of. Yeah. Yeah, because they must be devoted to that, devoted to Guru, devoted to scriptures, all that. Then only they get realization. Then when they reject all that, then that's where they lose it. Then they become philanthropists. Yes. Anucheta Prakashika, from Sri Jiva Toshani. The Mayavadis accept the Vedas as the supreme authority and cite them profusely in support of their conclusions. Indeed, many of the references they use appear to support their theory. But here, Srila Jiva Goswami explains the true interpretation of the apparently monistic statements in the Vedas. In Sanskrit, words have two kinds of meanings, a primary meaning called Mukti-vritti, and a secondary meaning called Gona-vritti. Right? So that would be the Abhida and the Lakshana. It's just other terms. Right? Because just Abhida is showing that it's in connection with the direct meaning, so then you know is that Abhideya, as the process, is the direct meaning of the scriptures. Just so you connect the practical. Right? By the will of the Lord, Supreme Lord, each word has a potency. This potency gives a specific relationship between the word and its meaning. For example, the word cow has a potency in that it refers to a particular object of a form with four legs, a tail, two eyes, a dewlap, and other symptoms. Sometimes in a particular context, the primary meaning of a word does not convey the proper sense. Footnote 12. In the Bhagavad Gita, for example, Lord Krishna addresses Arjuna as Purusha Vyagra, a tiger among men. In its primary sense, a tiger is a ferocious animal with claws and fangs. Arjuna was certainly not such an animal. But Lord Krishna's words cannot be regarded as meaningless. Hence, the need arises for an interpretation. Purusha Vyagra is a metaphor, and the Lord is referring to Arjuna as a tiger only to indicate his courage and prowess as a warrior. The word, quote-unquote, tiger in this phrase applies to these two characteristics that the tiger and Arjuna have in common, not in the primary sense of the tiger's shape and other habits. Right? So then you have the poetic, because then the poetic will have much more of the secondary. Right? In such cases, a variable second meaning must apply and the primary meaning used in a figurative sense. This is so because scriptural statements cannot be meaningless. They are apurusheya in nature and therefore must be free from defects. So they always have meaning. Right? Krishna has given that potency and the Vedas have come from him, from his breathing. So they're always going to have, the words are going to always have meaning. But it's just a matter of how it's done. Because Krishna, as it mentioned before, in the 11th canto, Krishna likes the hidden element. That the absolute is explained, but it has that little bit of a hidden aspect. Because then, one, if it's hidden, you put in some work, and two, you have to hear from Guru. Does that make sense? Or is that so? So, that could be, that would also explain one thing, is that you generally see is that when you're working in the academic kind of field, then they'll explain things up to a point. You have to finish the thought process. Either one, they don't know what's beyond that, or two, there's so many options they don't know what to pick, so they just let you pick and like that, or you go through it, and then once you've done them, they ask why. And then that starts conversation, so that gives them another day worth living for. Right? That makes sense. Right? And then in your practical, it just gives what you're supposed to do. But it doesn't necessarily bring about the thought pattern, only as much as bringing it to what you do. But why it works like that won't be thought about. Right? So then here we're taking is that is the thought of what it is, that is being given practically what it is, but at the same time as you're supposed to take that and take it to the next level of how you're going to apply it. Right? Because as a class format, we're hearing. So that itself is a service. But at the same time, it's from what we hear, we're supposed to apply. So applying that, then that means contemplation. Does that make sense? So that means we have to take that further. So it's a, yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Can we say that the Vedas do that also to attract people who might not be attracted to in a more specific means?
Yes, that's fair. Because the idea is if everybody accepts the Veda, then through these kind of discussions, you could take them through a process to change their interpretation. Because they're accepting the authority of the Veda. Right? But now if they don't accept the authority of the Veda, then they don't care about your evidence. You know, like it was given, the point is that Lord Chaitanya is preaching to the Buddhists and they don't change. When it reaches to the Maya bodies, they change. Right? Just because there's no common ground of acceptance of authority. If someone doesn't accept authority, you can't really work with them in any area. Right? You know, it means logic is there. But then when it gets down to how you're going to apply and things like that, because the logic will simply step, and now how do you apply? You have to follow the Veda.
But logic is also based on pramana. They don't accept that pramana.
Yes, that's the whole point. It's all based on that. So there is some general logic that people will use, but then sometimes people can't even see their illogical presentation. You know, I was walking, and I tripped. When I looked up, I saw you, and so therefore you're why I tripped. You know? It doesn't make sense, but to them it does. And it doesn't matter what you say, it's not going to change. You know, no, but why were you there? Why can't I be there? Why were you there?
For this reason that Jiva Goswami defines Adoshraddha as a stage which is solidified only when one accepts the lotus feet of a spiritual master.
Uh-huh.
He defines Adoshraddha like that, like a previous discussion.
Okay. By accepting the lotus feet of the spiritual master, that makes it very exact. That's good. Because otherwise you can say, oh, but how can you tell if they have faith or not? You'll get into all that stuff. You know, just, no? Yes. And then accepting means then you're applying.
Yes.
So I mean, first stage that you just accept, then that's good. Then as you start to apply, and then as you start to get realization, then you see that the faith is getting deeper and deeper. So then the depth that comes from following, so the perfection of following the surrender to spiritual masters attaining prema. As Prabhupada said, prema is mature shraddha. So, hence, the Vedic texts that appear to support the monistic doctrine cannot be abandoned as ambiguous babblings just because their primary meaning contradicts the conclusion of Vyasadeva's trance. Rather, those statements must be interpreted in a manner consistent with the conclusion of the Vedas, right? Because the Vedas have a conclusion. So, Achintaveda Veda Tattva, that philosophy answers all of these things. There's no problem. Like you saw in other philosophies, they can only work with certain verses in the Vedas. And so they can't accept others. You know, it's just like they'll go back to the point of where everything's coming from Pradhan. But then going before that, where does Pradhan come from and all that, that they don't deal with. Right? So they just don't deal with those areas of the scriptures. So then here we see is that then with Purva and Uttara? But what's the term used? Purva? Mimamsa. Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa. Then with these two schools, they'll accept all the verses of the Veda. Right? So they'll work with. But what happens with Purva Mimamsa and Shankara's Uttara Mimamsa is that they will interpret verses to make it fit their point. So it doesn't work. So they have to change something that would be direct and make it indirect. That for the Vaishnava philosophy, even there's no need to do that. So all verses of the Vedas are consistent in their meanings and their relationship with each other. Right? If one's approached guru. Right? Because these others, they also say you have to approach guru. Right? So then that's not a problem. So then it becomes the proper understanding. You know? And it's the easiest. It's sometimes more difficult to explain some verses if you're using the philosophies of the four sampradayas. Right? But if you use the Chintaveda Veda Tattva, it includes all of those, so that means every verse can be explained. That's why sometimes you see the most succinct direct explanation sometimes given by Ramanujacharya, sometimes by Madhvacharya, or Nimbarka, or Vishnu Swami, or one of their followers. You know, Vadi Rajas is mentioned, and then Raghunandana, I think. He's also a Madhva. And some of these others. So they've given very exact definitions. And so we'll use them, because the point is the Chintaveda Veda Tattva includes all those approaches. And they'll give something very exact, and so it'll work. So there's no need. Once somebody's done something, you don't need to do more. Gotama is, Nyaya is revealed through Gotama. So someone else doesn't have to come up with a logical system. Right? He has the 16 padarthas. Is it 16 or 20?
16.
And so then, that's enough. You don't need 17 or 15. Everyone just accepts that. All schools accept that. What you do with it, that's another thing. Okay. So,
yeah. The fun part is the misinterpretations by Purva Mimamsakas and Shankara's Uttara Mimamsakas. The Jaiminis, they say those verses which express inaction are not to be taken literally, because everything is meant for an action.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes.
The opposite is Shankara's. Everything meant for inaction, ultimately Brahman.
Yeah, giving up material action and just spiritual. That's it. So one is only renunciation, the other one is only attachment.
Sometimes we see, to use against Shankara, we may use
the Jaimini. Yeah, and vice versa. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what you see is that in the Govardhan pastime, because Jaimini gives such a nice explanation, then he just uses that argument against the points that his father's making. He doesn't have to use anything higher than that. Because it's already been nicely worked out. Right? If someone has a system for catching a snake or something, you don't have to work out a different system. Everybody just uses that. So, yeah.
Prabhupada uses yogi siddhis to disprove scientists, and then uses scientists to disprove the yogi siddhis.
Yes, yes. Like that. They go together. Because they're in the same category. It's just different approaches of the two.
One act of the Supreme, but not the Shakti. Other acts of Shakti, but
not the Supreme. Yes. So when you're trying to establish Shakti, you use the one that accepts Shakti. When you're trying to establish the Supreme, you use the one that does that. So science will accept Shakti, and the yoga will accept the Supreme. And so then you can use them like that. So, great. Okay, rather, those statements must be interpreted in a manner consistent with the conclusion of the Vedas. Attempting them literally or rejecting them outright will lead to confusion, even to contempt for the Apurusheya Shabda. Right, so you always have to be careful that the Veda is always correct. So then we have to see that we don't develop any... This outright rejection or the confusion that comes up, that's Niyamagraha aspect. You don't understand it, you reject it. Or you only understand one part of it and then only try to apply half of the meaning. Srila Baladeva Vibhushana. The scriptures describing reflection and bifurcation are used to show similarity to reflection and bifurcation using Gona Vritti. Right? So it's indirect. Devadatta is a lion. By Gonavriti, it means that Devadatta is similar to a lion, not that he is a lion. Quote, how can this be determined as the meaning? Vyasa has shown this in two sutras. The first sutra refers both propositions, bifurcation and reflection, because of their impossibility. A piece of land is cut by water, or Brahman is not cut by upadis. Brahman cannot accept upadis, and hence to compare with land being cut by water is inappropriate. Shruti says, agriyo nahi grihyate. Brahman is not subject to any upadi. Right? They use the same thing to come up with their weirdo philosophies. That's just so fun. Right? Read Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26. Right? How did they use it? They also said that grihya.
That was also Vaishnava
tradition. Oh, that was us. Okay. Okay, so we used it. Oh, it was in the Uttara. Okay. That which is imperceptible cannot be perceived. And what did we just say? Brahman is not subject to any upadi, because you have to have an upadi to perceive. Okay. So that's why it also says is you're able to perceive Krishna, but he doesn't have upadis. He's on the transcendental platform. Because upadis here means material. Because when you're dealing with mayavadis, they're only trying to get out of the material. There's no concept of spiritual designations. Like that. So there it's only meaning that. So when you say the Lord has no upadis, it means no mundane. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have spiritual. Right? Thus, it is not true that Brahman is cut by upadis. The reflection of the sun is seen in water as a fragment, but the reflection of Brahman is not seen, since Brahman is all-pervading. Brahman does not have a reflection. Right? So the sun is there. You're seeing it is a small thing, but the point is that Brahman can't be seen since it's all-pervading. You can't get the whole of Brahman in the pot. since the pot's limited. So how would you get all of Brahman in the pot? So you can't see. So using the sun as an example doesn't illustrate Brahman. What do the scriptural statements mean? The second sutra answers. The two statements do not employ mukhya vritti, literal meaning. The examples are used to illustrate only qualities of Jiva and Brahman. Vridi, rasa, bhaktvam. Thus the Lord and Jiva are a big piece of land and a small piece of land, or the sun represents the Lord and the reflection indicates the dependent Jiva. Why? Because taking the partial analogy fulfills the meaning of scripture. Antar bhavat. Only by taking this meaning is there a correct correlation of the object and the compared object. Right, so how it's been described otherwise. Otherwise, in other places, there are verses that don't support that particular view. And so then, how would it match unless the other one is direct and this is indirect? So the Mayavadis would just leave those other ones. Right? They'll just find anything that they can take and use in their own way, then that has meaning. The walk of determination. They're doing something.
Without having a, you can say, expert guru who can know all the Veda, it's very easy to interpret.
Yes. Yes, very. That's why he says Shraddha comes from that surrender to Guru. So when one has that faith that one surrenders, we see, to the founder Acharya and accepts that this is the understanding, right? Then the process starts working. But otherwise, if not, it won't be able to work. Means if you, means even in the other sampradayas, you still have to have the understanding of that line through the founder Acharya. You wouldn't be able to understand the teachings of other acharyas in the Sri line, not following Ramanuja, like that. Does that make sense? Or in the Brahma line above the Gaudiyas, without following Madhva, it would not be clear. Right. So, yeah. So the point is without accepting the founder acharya, that gives you the faith. Then in Bhajana Kriya, then you'll take initiation. But that Shraddha has come by surrendering to the instruction, accepting that understanding. So that means it's happened before initiation. It's already, the process starts, Shraddha is there. Then naturally it will develop as you go through. Yeah. In the first sutra, both proposals are refuted. In the second sutra, the truth is established by Gona Vritti. The opinion of the author of the sutras is that the jiva is like an amsha, or reflection of Brahman. And the opinion of cheaters who are opposed to the Lord is that the Lord is also an amsha, or reflection of Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So then they're taking that there's just Brahman undifferentiated. But then the problem is all their analogies don't work. But they're trying to then establish that Ishwara. See, if Ishwara is also an illusion, why are we making something so special? Because the thing is if by knowledge, then you come to your position of being Brahman, why is it by the Mayavad philosophy that then Ishwara is not Brahman? Because Ishwara is in knowledge. But they're still separate. That knowledge made them, by their philosophy, made Brahman separated as Ishwara. And then we're saying that knowledge is what's going to bring us and make us Brahman. But it didn't work out for Brahman. Why would it work out for us? You know, Brahman's pure. And we're already, you know, an adjustment. Getting more serious. Yes.
Looking at them.
No.
So they're making another entity as Ishwara?
Yes. He says we'll go through the steps again. So you have Brahman, the one Brahman, undifferentiated, no qualities, no nothing. And then and Brahman is all that exists. There isn't anything else other than Brahman. And then suddenly there's a relationship between Brahman and avidya. Right?
Because
not asking where is the vidya.
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense. That combination produces the jiva. Okay? Then the jiva in his, you know, how you say, dreamings, you know, about what he could be and all this and that, then dreams up this whole concept of the material world. And so he creates Maya by his dreaming. So the 8,400,000, all that, this is all one jiva's, you know, contemplation. Pretty good jiva, right? You know, pretty far out, you know. So, and then, now this Maya that's been produced by this jiva, that was produced by suddenly mixing Brahman with avidya, right? Sees the as it goes, each one's so crazy. Each one makes no sense. That you add it all up, you can't think anymore because nothing makes any sense. Because something makes sense in that, and then where it doesn't make sense, you can go, hey. But when nothing makes sense, you just leave it. Yeah, you get lost. And so now, Brahman accepts this covering of Maya that's been created by the jiva that suddenly was there due to avidya in that relationship. Then, now, Brahman manifests as Ishwara. So in other words, Brahman with Maya, you get jiva. Brahman with avidya, you get jiva, and Brahman with vidya, or knowledge, you know, this is the upper half. You know, in other words, the lower, yeah. And someone will say the avidya is part of Maya's thing, but then the problem is here, it had to be created by the jiva. Then Brahman accepts this, now becomes Ishwara. But now, except now, as we're saying, now with knowledge, the dream goes away. But the point is then why is Ishwara still there? Right? Because Ishwara means you're covering Ishwara with knowledge. So if knowledge gets you to Brahman, it won't. Because when you take knowledge and Brahman, you get Ishwara. So at least if nothing else, then we're all God, right? You know, by their philosophy. So, right? So that's the fun. So now the one thing that's not is also another thing that doesn't make any sense. One is how is this jiva thought up all these 8 million, whatever it is, like that? And then Ishwara controls Maya, who then controls the jiva, even though jiva is the source of Maya, and only with that connecting with that, then Brahman becomes Ishwara. You know? So technically, he's controlling with Maya, but the Mayas come from the jiva. And then the fun part is Mayas come from the jiva. Maya includes vidya and avidya. That means the vidya has already come from that jiva. So why isn't that first jiva already on the liberated platform? But he's not. No, that, not by their explanation. By our explanation, yes. But by theirs, not. Because we know jiva here means Mahavishnu. Right, because he's Sankarshan. Sankarshan is also known as jiva, because he's the source and support of all jivas. Right, like Narayana means Nara means man, and I think Ayana means support, like that. So Narayana means he's the support of all. Yeah. So this is their philosophy of this one. Right, it's a little more complicated because the other ones that were more direct, then they got defeated. So you come up with this more weirdo one, and then people can't even tell what's going on.
And deflection is also here, or no?
Sorry?
Deflection and bifurcation also in here?
Well, they're kind of stepping around that, because this is brought up only when... Because why would you go to such a lengthy explanation when you can just say, "Is no, it's just like Akasha is covered by a pot, and so there, and then you break the pot. And, oh, it's just immediate, you know, you have... Somebody accepts. Or it's just like the reflection in the pot. Either one, which if the air one doesn't work, the ether one doesn't work, then you use the reflection one. And if that doesn't work, then you use this one. If that doesn't work, then you drag out, you know, the old Buddhist stuff, you know.
This is
14th
century by Madhusudan Vachaswami.
This is 14th century. And Shankara was?
Shankara was 8, 7.
8 or 7.
And then when 12th century Madhusudan...
Oh, Madhusudan was 12.
No, first Ramanuja is 12.
And then Madhusudan?
13.
So they 12, 13, 14.
So they defeated everything, then they came with this Ekajiva.
But then they came up with that. Okay.
This
soul discovers the direction of the mind with avidya. This was the source of avidya.
That's the point. They don't have an explanation. That's why they use suddenly.
Darkness is a lack of light.
Yes.
And avidya is a lack of the mind in the philosophy, or it's some.
Avidya means the point is when you're not seeing things in connection with Brahman or with transcendence or Krishna, then the avidya shakti works. But the avidya shakti is just one of Krishna shaktis, because if you have vidya, you're going to have avidya. Because point is if you have shakti man, you have shakti. They're opposites. So naturally, even within shakti, you're going to have opposites, because the quality in Satkaryavad, then the quality of something, it can be found in its origin. Like a clay pot, you can find the nature of clay in it, that's where it's from. Right? So since Krishna has this contradiction of being Shakti and Shaktiman, that means the effect, he's the cause. Right? So he has both. So that means in the effect, the Shakti, there will be opposites. So therefore you have hot, cold, this, that. So when you only see the Lord's energies without the Lord, then you only have duality. That's why in the material platform it's all duality, because that's all there is. It's only harmonized by the absolute truth, because the absolute truth is non-dual. So Lord and his energies are non-different, but at the same time you can tell the difference by function. Does that make sense? So they don't take it back to that. So we can explain this. They can't. So that's why we were saying they use word jugglery in that, so that you don't ask. You know, and even if you do ask, they'll say it's inconceivable. So then if it's so why is it this is inconceivable, but Brahman's not? You know, if Brahman's higher, why is it inconceivable is higher than the Brahman? But Brahman's supposed to be the highest. So, you understand? They just have their sayings that they say. So someone who's been at it for a long time just knows all the things. And whatever you say, they just have their little answer.
Sometimes when we explain our philosophy to individuals, they ask about which are the soul, what is that beginning? The soul is the kernel.
Yes.
How is possible that soul is eternal? And we say that it's inconceivable on our level.
Yeah, inconceivable means it's only revealed by the Supreme. They just say it's inconceivable means you can't understand it, because Brahman's beyond in words, but they don't mind talking all day about Brahman, even though you can't explain Brahman by words. So we say is, yes, words can't explain Brahman, but the Lord's potency, since he's transcendental, that therefore can empower the words. Otherwise, why do words even have meaning? So they have to accept that their words must have meaning. Where does that potency come from? Right? And so if they're saying, well, it has to come from Brahman for it to be transcendental, but then for it to be words, that means there's variety in that means it has to be material. So it has to come from Maya. So then how could words bring about a transcendental understanding or realization? So it doesn't make sense when you explain it to them, because they leave out the person. If you have the original person, then all this technical philosophy makes sense. But in theirs, it doesn't make sense, because they don't have the complete package. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, we have the whole car, but we don't have the little thing to start it. You know, it's just not going to work.
You can see that many traditions are starting by this type of thinking.
Yes.
Means not based on the Veda without Guru, and by developing teaching, it becomes a philosophy.
Yeah. No, it's just means all these philosophies are always there. It's just that due to the modes, at certain times, certain ones become manifest. Does that make sense? And now, especially before, it may have been there, but like, you know, who's been to Paris? So you won't bump into those. So only a few people, some intellectuals, may be aware of these things.
Yes, yes.
Right? But now with the modern communication,
yes,
then everybody is subjected to anybody's philosophy.
Yes.
And then at the same time, because of that, they become so bewildered they don't become very effective in any philosophy, so then it neutralizes itself.
Yes.
Right? Because there's so many other ways you could do it, you know. Like that. You know, it's just like, okay, let's say, so we're thinking about, you know, raising a child, so it takes a village to raise a child, right? That's an African saying. So then Africa is great, we should follow that? No, that's not good. You know, say, so everything will balance, and it just, everything loses its meaning. If you have 1,000 desires, they all cancel each other out. you know, like I mentioned that once. Once they had this thing where they did it 1 year. They did it 1 year, 2 years, and then decided, no, this is too crazy. After Janmashtami, they took all the Mahaprasad. Because at that time, there's a lot of Mahaprasad, very few devotees in Mayapur. And it was quite well controlled, so then you had a bunch. So it was decided, after this, you know, distributing around to everybody, they'd give it to the Gurukul boys. So then they had it on tables. You know, it was like, I think, 7 of these tables, like a what do you call that, coffee table size? 7 of those. And then, because it was all in pots, you know, so you put all the pots there. But to have some fun, they decide, you know, because kids, they like the, you know, competition and running and all this. So they put the tables at one end of the hallway and put the kids at the other end. And so they're all there ready. And then they say, okay, go, you know, and then for the kids it's fun and everything like that. For, I don't know, like 30 seconds, no one got anywhere. They never went past the start line because everybody was going and pulling and this and that. And then they'd get in the guy behind them, so they were all falling on each other, and then it just didn't go anywhere. And then eventually one or two got up, and then it was slowly, and then they all came around and like that. And then it made such a mess, they thought, okay, we'll have it out in the garden next time. You know, Providence Park. So then they put all the tables and put all the kids like that. But then in going, because so many kids came, they all just fell on the tables, broke all the legs off the tables, everything like that. So then they said, okay, maybe we'll just have them all sit down and we'll come around the pots and just serve. You know, we'll have some fun. Yeah. So like that is when you have so many desires, none of them's prominent, nothing can get anywhere. Like that. So that's why then you have to have this thing of, you know, goal-oriented, you know, make your priorities, these kind of things. Then people can get efficient. Otherwise, they have so many things, they want everything at once.
Mm-hmm. They say, the doctors say that it's one of the causes for depression. Too many options.
Too many options.
Too many options and not enough abilities to fulfill any of those.
So that means, according to that, that means Stalin solved the problem depression.
Yeah, he did.
Because I was thinking, just a step. You send them off to the gulags,
yeah,
and there's no options. So then, naturally, then you know, you just focus on escaping, and so then they are inspired and everything like that. So,
I think that was a little further in America. In that time, there was depression. So
yeah.
Solve it, he did.
Yeah, they couldn't solve the depression, he did, yeah.
Hitler did medicine?
Sorry?
Hitler had his cramps?
I wouldn't take it so far, because he did have a few options. You know, camp 1, camp 2, or camp 3, so, yeah. We're on the Vriti? Yeah? Vriti. Next, Srila Jiva Goswami explains the non-difference between the Lord and the Jiva from the Vaishnava point of view by the principle of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. Anucheta 43. Thus, scriptures speaking of non-difference of Brahman and the Jiva should be coordinated with the conclusion that Vyasa experienced in Samadhi. both the jiva, right, because he's compiled all the Vedic literatures, and he's still a slightly bewildered. So his guru then explains things. Then in his meditation, then he understands those teachings. So then those verses of the Bhagavatam, as Jiva Goswami, what did he, what was the term he used? No, not that. Contrary to the heart, it's just the powers. Okay, no, it was another one somewhere. Oh well. Yeah, and so, oh no, he said they're the essential point verses or something. Didn't he say that? Maybe that was Baladev.
Explain the whole philosophy for the.
Yeah, no, but there was some place where he used some particular statement that saying that. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. By the achintya shakti of the Lord, natural to him, which makes the impossible possible, there can be both difference and non-difference of jiva and Brahman. Thus, contradiction is avoided. This is understood by comparing the jiva to a particle in the ray of the sun, which represents the Lord. Right? So there, it's the sunshine is part of the sun, but at the same time, it's different.
Page 33.
Yes, later on upon hearing some selected Bhagavatam verses. No, that was it. It meant that he was saying that those verses describing Vyasadeva's realization. No. It would just mean he gave a term that he used for those verses. You know, in other words, that they were kind of, they stand out as kind of essential verses of Bhagavatam. That it's based on that, because we have the Chatur Shloki, and then we have, so in other words, Vyasa's understanding in that first canto. That's then how we will appreciate and interpret the Chatur Shloki. Right, because now it's a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. With that, we'll understand the Chakra Shloka. Because otherwise,
in the Anucheta Prakashika, the fifth line of
which page?
33 page.
33.
The core of the Bhagavata, Srimad Bhagavata.
The core. That's what he said. The core. Okay, so that's the core, and then you have the Chakra Shloka is the essence. So. Yes. So in other words, his realization is how you're going to appreciate the Chakra Shloki. And then the whole Bhagavatam is expanded.
Here, Jiva Goswami using this verses to explain the whole Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana of the full philosophy.
Right.
That's okay. Why it's
core. The core, yes. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Natai Gaurav Premanandini.